And thank you all. Speaking of grace, thank you all for how gracious you were to my brother last week. He was really impressed, really knocked out with the reception that he received and the kind words that were said to him and about him. And of course, I'm grateful when anybody is nice to a member of my family. So it was wonderful. A few weeks ago in a staff meeting, I asked our staff, I said, what are your expectations of a sermon? I don't remember specifics, but you need to know that the four of us in the room represented roughly 200 years of worship service attendance and exposure to 8,000 or 9,000 sermons. The expectations were very, very low. One of our staff members even said, I don't expect anything from a sermon. Nothing. Nada. Zilch. As the laughter and tomfoolery of the meeting was dying down, one of them asked me what my expectations of a sermon are. And I puffed up my chest and I raised one finger into the air and I said, I've been a parish minister for 16 years. And I've been delivering sermons for far longer than that. I gave my first sermon when I was 12 years old. And my expectation is that my listeners will become electrified by my delivery. Their hearts will be set on fire and they will rush from the sanctuary and begin changing the world, feeding the hungry, creating peace throughout the world, building schools and healing clinics in every village in the world. I said, I've delivered all those sermons expecting that and it never works. The Reverend Dr. Michelle McClendon reminded me that Einstein's definition of insanity is to repeat the same thing over and over and expect different results. There is also an old saying that people will hit themselves in the head with a hammer because they know how good it'll feel when they stop. Still, I never give up hope. Not that my sermon will inspire you to be like every who down in Whoville, finally joining the hundreds of millions of good-hearted voices in the world to create food and peace and joy and schools and healing clinics everywhere, but rather that the great spirit of love, which enlivens every subatomic pulse of energy in the universe, will inspire you and set fire to you and rewire you and make a flyer of you. Until you feel deeply within you that you have what it takes to create the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Not by me and my words, but by the great spirit that goes by 10,000 names and lives as the subatomic power structure for all that lives and moves and has being. Today's topic is health, and health is very controversial. Here's the controversy. We tend to blame people for being sick. Cancer, heart disease, diabetes, a broken leg. The first question we ask is, what did that person do to make themselves sick? Sometimes we even have survivor guilt. You all met my brother last week, great guy, real sweetheart. When he was 13 years old, he got hit by a car and darn near killed. I felt terrible guilt over that accident because I could have prevented it. It's a long story, but I could have prevented that accident. I was a selfish, egotistical prig. As hard as that may be for some of you to imagine. And because of it, my brother came within a hair's breadth of being killed. Pretty big guilt trip. But the story gets even worse. For the next 47 years, he had knee pain and knee challenges and a serious knee injury while playing high school football. And I thought all that was my fault. because he'd been in that car wreck. I had done it to him. About 2 months ago, he finally had knee surgery and discovered that his knee problems were not due to the car hitting him, but rather due to a birth defect. The defect was corrected, and he's going to be fine. My guilt is relieved, and not a moment too soon. I plan to spend the next 47 years not feeling guilty. So how is it for you this morning? Are you feeling guilty over some perceived hurt to someone else's health? When Adlai Stevenson, the last Unitarian to run for president, was 12 years old, he and his cousins were playing with a shotgun. Stevenson was holding the gun when it went off and killed one of his cousins. He bore that guilt for the rest of his life. An even more important question is, do you feel guilt for your own health challenges? Are you sick and blame yourself for your illness? I'm reading Michael Brown's book, The Presence Process, and the way he pronounces blame is be lame. If you want to be lame, then use a lot of blame. Beat yourself up. So many of our heartaches and troubles are self-inflicted, and we add to the pain and misery by using blame and guilt to continue the pattern of self-sabotage. Just the other day, I wondered whether I have stopped shooting myself in the foot or just paused to reload. Yes, we make ourselves sick by eating too much meat, too much processed sugar and flour, too much junk food. Young lady over here would say, not enough broccoli. Smoking too many cigarettes, drinking too much alcohol, sitting on our butts when we ought to be exercising and sweating the toxins out of our bodies. Let me tell you how bad it is. I have written 5 published books. I wrote a newspaper column for nearly 50 years, and I've written thousands of sermons, and I still can't even spell exercise. It's the honest truth. Every time I write the word exercise, my spell checker stops me dead in my tracks. And then I go back and try again, and I've still spelled it wrong, and I finally give up and look it up. I know that my diet is the great enemy of my good health. And I still eat the wrong stuff. I do not believe in a literal devil, an embodied Lucifer or Satan or whatever the Sam Hill you want to call him. But if there were one, I would blame him and absolutely without reservation for making pizza and ice cream taste so good and be so bad for me. That's just mean. And it's wrong, and I don't like it one bit. I thought if I would just quit eating meat, which I did 16 years ago, that I could eat pizza and ice cream all I wanted. Turned out not to be true. Now, I've listed 4 movies in your order of service on page 3, at the bottom of page 3. They're Fed Up, Forks Over Knives, Supersize Me, and Cowspiracy. They're all available online. If you get a chance, watch them. Cowspiracy is not a movie about how awful animals are treated in slaughterhouses and on factory farms, although there's plenty of nightmarish horror in those places. Rather, it is a movie about how half the cause of global warming, climate change, is due to animal agriculture. And nobody is talking about it. Half the fresh water used on this planet today is used to support animal agriculture. And before you dismiss me as an insufferable fanatic, please consider that there are alternative sources of meat. Even in a meat-eating diet, you can reduce the quantity of meat you eat. And if you are a typical American meat eater, you are eating far more meat than your grandparents ate. and theirs was certainly not produced on factory farms with the kinds of chemicals being fed to cattle, swine, and poultry today. Much heart disease and cancer can be directly attributed to a diet too heavy in red meat and processed junk food, and the statistics are only getting worse, not better. As many of you know, Oprah Winfrey was sued by the Cattle Ranchers Association because of her railing against red meat. They lost their case in court because they could not prove that her data on the correlation between red meat and heart disease were incorrect. Okay, now it sounds like I'm blaming sick people for their diseases, and I certainly am not. There are myriad factors that go into any illness. Let's look at attitude. Many of you know the Charles Swindoll quote on attitude. Let me share it. He says, "The longer I live, the more I realize the impact of attitude on life. Attitude to me is more important than facts. It is more important than the past, education, money, circumstances, failure, success, what other people think or say or do. It is more important than appearance, giftedness, or skill. It will make or break a company or a home. The remarkable thing is that we have a choice every day regarding the attitude we will embrace for that day. We cannot change our past. We cannot change the fact that people will act in a certain way. We cannot change the inevitable. The only thing we can do is play on the one string we have, and that is our attitude. I am convinced that life is 10% what happens to me and 90% how I react to it. And so it is with you. We are in charge of our attitudes." End of quote. Now, I love that quote. It hangs on the bulletin board outside my office. I've read it often and drawn a great deal of encouragement from it over the years. There's just one problem with it. If you hear it with certain ears, you will find it as blaming and discouraging as anything else I have said today. "Oh, I'm sick because I have a bad attitude. And if I would just change my attitude, I could get well. Is that what you're saying, preacher man?" Well, you and Charles Swindoll can take your attitude and stick it. You know what I'm talking about. Do with this material what you will. Consider the evidence. Read the research. Study your own particular illness. Ask your doctor. Think about it. Work with it. Here is what I genuinely believe about everything: health, wealth, relationships, success, failure, Buddha, Jesus, Kuan Yin, the Chinese goddess of compassion, and all the other energy in the universe. Here is what I genuinely believe. What you genuinely believe is far more important than what I genuinely believe. That's why I love being a Unitarian minister. Truth is where you find it and how you find it. I can tell you something with the full force of my convictions, and if you don't believe it, you're just going to shrug your shoulders and say, "Well, that doesn't sound right to me." That's great. That's great. I get to rant and rave and wave my arms around, and you get to pick and choose what you like and what you don't like. The folks down the road at the fundamentalist churches do the same thing, but they have to pretend that they all believe one thing. That's kind of sad and kind of funny, but we need to be careful of judging them harshly too. Everybody's on their own path. Everybody is weighing how to get through this life with as much of what they came here for as they can. The most dangerous thoughts, I think, are those that separate me off from whole groups of people. We really are all in this together. Please keep us in the loop about your own personal health issues. We're pretty good at hospital visits and taking care of each other, but we can't help if we don't know. Let me close this hopeful sermon by asking you to open your hymn books And look at page number 698, reading number 698. And let's read this together. Take courage, friends. The way is often hard, the path is never clear, and the stakes are very high. Take courage, for deep down there is another truth. You are not alone.